From the Lynn to Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the third day of September 2025. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Greg Johnson. Allendale just released its farmer yield survey. We'll have the results and discuss those with Rich Nelson. And we'll turn our attention to the weather forecast. Cold, maybe even frost, possibly a freeze, says Drew Lerner. Stay with us right here on the Closing Market Report. December corn for the day settled at 418. It was a nickel lower. The March down 4 3/4 at 436. May 4 3/4 lower at 446. November beans at 1031 and a half down 9.5 cents. And the January $10.50 down 9.5 cents as well. Greg Johnson from TGM, that's TotalGrainMarketing.com, now joins us to take a look at the marketplace. Hi, Greg. Thank you for being with us again this week.
Good to be with you, Todd.
Are you busy getting ready for the harvest season?
We are. This dry weather has really sped things along. I think we will probably see a little bit of harvest activity next week, and for sure the following week, I think we'll see a lot more people up and running that week of the 15th.
You did not take the soybean field that I saw was coming off yesterday, and I take it in that case because I saw one, and it looked like it was ready. They were parked when I came by, but it was interesting that there was one off. I talked to my brothers, and I said, you know, we're coming to come early here, and you just go 80 miles straight west, and they're still thinking it'll be September 20 before they even think about it. So just depends on where you are and how much rainfall you've gotten. But I also want to know what you think that means across the state of Illinois as it relates to yield for corn and soybeans.
Unfortunately, I think here in east central Illinois, we're probably responsible for bringing the statewide average down. I think based on a lot of the private crop tours that we've seen go happen here along some of the county farm bureaus here in east central Illinois, we're down about 10 bushels from last year's numbers, which isn't a disaster, but with these prices, we certainly would have liked to have had more bushels to offset the lower prices. So I think we're 10 bushels lower than last year on corn, but that's here in central Illinois. Northern Illinois, I think, is going to be above average. I think they're going to be above last year. They could be 5 bushels higher than last year. So, you know, when you take 5 bushels higher in the northern part of the state and 10 bushels lower here in the central part of the state, east central part of the state, you know, I think the Illinois number may be, you know, 5 bushels too high. I could believe that. I could agree with people that are saying that. The problem is that's just one state. If you look at, other areas that have gotten plenty of rain, you know, northern Illinois, Iowa, Minnesota, Nebraska, the Dakotas, you know, probably the yields are going to be pretty good in those areas. And so, you know, if just a relatively small region here in east central Illinois is lower, I'm just not sure if that's a big enough area to get the market to move higher.
In just a bit, we should talk with Rich Nelson from Allendale. They released the results of their surveys they cover about 87% of total corn production, 84% of total soybean production with their survey. Of the 12 states in the Midwest, they came up with higher yields than USDA in Iowa, Minnesota, both of the Dakotas, and Nebraska. And those were already big numbers. It just shows that they've had a lot of rainfall this season and came through, as you suggested, with really big numbers. That'll back up, I would think, into our part of the world where we may need some more. There might be some call. We've talked a lot about bases. Will your bases be better, do you think, because of the 10 bushel shy that you think we're looking at in this area?
If it was just based on the corn yield, I would say yes, there would have been a chance for better bases. The problem is we still don't have a bean export program going on. China has still not bought any beans, and they're responsible for a big chunk of our soybean export program. Without that, beans just aren't going to move this fall like they normally do in the fall. And so beans are going to have to be stored, and that's going to take away from some of the storage space that normally is allocated to corn. So even though the corn yield is a little bit smaller, the fact that we're going to be storing more beans in the fall as a nation probably would make me think that basis levels will continue to be under pressure throughout most of the fall harvest.
What have you been watching most attentively this week? I know the Farm Bureau numbers some of those crop tours that are coming in later in the season. What else?
Well, really, we need to see this rain. The soybeans are the one thing. I think corn's far enough along that even if it doesn't rain anymore, I think you could say the corn is what it is. You know, maybe a little bit of test weight might be lost or gained if we get some rain or if we don't get some rain. But the soybeans are the ones that really the yields could really be affected. It's been dry for at least 3 weeks, and if we don't get this rain here today, there's not much rain in the forecast. For the next 7 to 10 days. So these soybean yields could be very low, you know, very much lower than what we were hoping for. The pod counts were extremely high. Pro Farmer and others are all finding extremely high pod counts. So, you know, the potential is there, but we need some rain to fill out those top pods. And if we get the rain, I think we could still have a decent bean crop, but every day that it doesn't rain, we're probably losing a little bit of soybean yield, especially here in East Central Illinois.
Yeah, are you continually getting calls, more calls from farmers as the dryness continues in the area, that are worried that they just didn't sell enough up front and now they don't have the extra bushels that maybe they thought they did as of August 1?
Exactly. Yeah, you know, normally we get a summer rally. We didn't get one this year, so farmers tended to hold on waiting for that rally and didn't get one. And in hindsight, we probably should have sold at those prices, which weren't great, but as it turns out, they were the best prices we saw. So yeah, it's going to be a tough year because the rally, if we get one, probably won't come until after harvest. And so if you've got bins, obviously bins will pay for themselves this year, but if you have to pay either high DP charges or put it on a wide basis or pay extremely high prices for options, it's going to be tough to make money if you don't have bin space.
Now, Ed Usett did tell us yesterday, ag economist from University of Minnesota, that the carry in the market was something he thought producers, especially if they were behind, and he knows that they are, should take advantage of. You kind of just told us that as well. But he's saying if you're going to do it, you actually need to look and take advantage of it, make a cash sale, or do something to capture that carry.
Exactly. I mean, July corn futures are trading over 450. So rather than sell corn at sub $4, if you've got bins, you can sell July corn today for 450 on the board. Now the basis, you know, you might have to take 10 or 20 cents off of that, but it's still going to be, you know, 40 to 50 cents better than what the cash bid is. And again, you know, if you've got bin space and you sell that carry, you can capture that carry, and it may not be a extremely attractive price, but it's like I say, it's 40 to 50 cents better than where we are today, and it doesn't cost you 40 or 50 cents to store it if you've got your own bins. So that's something that farmers definitely should take a look at.
You know, there are a couple of things that sort of, I was looking at the weekly charts for both December corn and November beans earlier today. Beans since January, and they made a contract low, I think, in that time frame, or a low. I have been trading from, I don't know, 980 to 1060. We were close to that 1060 mark in the last few days, in a range. Corn, however, has just been steadily declining through that whole period, despite the fact that we've had just really, really, really good consumption. Any good ideas why that would be the case?
Well, you know, that 188 yield from the USDA really has
Yes,
triggered.
it did.
Yeah, that's going to limit.
I suppose, I mean, it's obvious, right? It was the acreage up front and the 188 on nearly 189 from USDA both, wasn't it?
Yeah, and even if you take the yield down to 185, which is very, very believable once they get out in the field and actually do some hand sampling, you know, 185 is still going to be a record yield by 4 bushels. You know, the old record was 181, and you know, anything above that is still going to be plenty of corn. And like you said, with the extra 2 million acres on top of that, we've got plenty of corn. So we need good exports, we need good feed demand, which we don't have, and we need good ethanol demand, which is kind of steady. So yeah, we need good demand to get rid of all this extra corn. That's the bottom line.
Interesting that you said we need good feed demand, which we don't have because USDA says we do have it. It'll be interesting to see how, right? It'll be interesting to see how all that plays out. Hey, thank you much. I appreciate it, Greg. We'll talk with you again next week.
Hey, thanks, Todd.
Greg Johnson is with TGM. That's TotalGrainMarketing.com. Now, I told you we'd be talking with Rich Nelson from Allendale. They released their annual survey of farmers, and yield expectations. He's now with us. Hi, Rich. Thank you for taking some time with me. Can you give me a quick history of this survey? How old is it and how accurate might it be?
Certainly. So we've completed the results of a 36th annual Allendale Nationwide yield survey. This one, in general, is a two-week survey of producers. It's covered in the last 2 weeks of August with an attempt and a general idea here to see what we can do as far as matching up with USDA's own September release of yield numbers. Now, as far as the accuracy here goes, over on the corn side, in the past 15 years, we've generally been within about two bushels, I want to say about 11 of those past 15 years, we've been within two bushels of USDA's September yield number. The other 4 years range from 2.3 to 4.6 bushels off. So overall, for the survey, and certainly for a survey in September, very, very close to what USDA may show. Numbers on the soybeans, in terms of the past 15 years, we've been within 1.5 bushels an acre of USDA's number 10 of those years. And really interesting to point out, last year was extremely accurate. We were only 1.1 bushel off USDA for corn and 0.1 for soybeans.
What did the survey results show for this year?
So USDA gave the trade a bit of a surprise here with their August numbers. They put yields at 188.8 around the U.S. for corn, and they suggested a 53.6 number here for soybeans. And the corn number was the bigger surprise of those two. Our survey actually suggested we may not see that much of a break on this coming report. For corn, 187.5, and for soybeans, 53.3 for nationwide numbers.
You do break these out by state. I made note that Iowa, Nebraska, Minnesota, the two Dakotas, were all higher than the USDA August figures.
Sure is right. And we really found a pattern which did kind of match up with that August rainfall discussion. Eastern Corn Belt did see very light declines in yield, as well as Missouri, due to that dryness situation. But keep in mind, for most of the West, they did have some good rainfall overall. And so we did see those numbers lightly boosted. So yes, a net decline in yields minimally, but overall lower in the East and a little higher in the West.
Were you surprised that the Iowa number, which was really big from USDA at 222 bushels to the acre, was bigger in your survey by a full bushel at 223?
I was a little bit. And one thing I will say, and people may want to criticize this survey and say, well, does this include the rust issue, the disease issues we heard so much about? And the issue which we probably will see is those may not really play into USDA's own numbers or our survey number, maybe until October, maybe until we see November, for instance. So overall, on the Iowa side, yes, we did push numbers on the corn, one bushel over USDA, soybeans, two bushels over USDA.
In Illinois, you have a break from 221 from USDA down to 216. That seems like that's probably in line. Where were the places that were really good in the state and those that were not so much?
You know, of course, we're going to have a discussion about some of the drier areas on the east central side. That's probably where we saw the larger of the hits. And the people on the northwest side who did participate in that generally very good July rainfall. That certainly was our distinction right there. So certainly for the eastern third, and specifically the east and south and southern portions, that's where we did see the problem show up here.
Anything else out of the survey that we should talk about, or can we discuss what you're thinking as it's related to marketing for just a moment?
Let's discuss one additional thing which we do include with our survey, and we do ask producers questions regarding their marketing. How much they've marketed for old crop and new crop. I will point out here, new crop corn sales only 15% complete. Over the prior 5 years, those numbers range from 21 to 35. So this is not a surprise to anybody. Certainly the point is we've got some very low new crop marketings. For soybeans, 16% of new crop has been sold. The prior 5 years were from 20 to 34%. So not a big surprise to anyone, but certainly those numbers do give us a bit of concern here for us.
At this point, I think most are suggesting that, particularly for corn, but for corn, soybeans, and wheat, if you've not marketed enough, that trying to capture the carry in the marketplace is something you should do. Would you agree?
Certainly right. So, of course, in big crop years and with large crops, the market does put in additional premiums in those back month futures. So even though we may not like this near-term price, perhaps we can capture the carry by selling, for instance, the March or the May contracts. And accepting that higher level of a premium there.
All right. Hey, thank you much. I appreciate it.
Thank you much. I appreciate it.
That's Rich Nelson with Allendale. It just completed its annual yield survey, done with farmers across the nation. Let's check the weather forecast now with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Thanks, Drew, for taking some time with me again today.
Absolutely. It's a beautiful day to be with you.
It has just been magnificent. The weather was great for Farm Progress Show last week. Do you think, well, we've been dry here, I suppose, for 3 weeks, and it shows we'll have an early harvest. But do you think that we can continue a good fall across much of the Midwest?
Yeah, you know, we will, but we also have a few bumps in the road to deal with. Now, first of all, let me address the dry issue first, and a big part of the lower Midwest and the Northern Delta and the Tennessee River Basin are chronically dry at this point, both top and subsoil running very short. And I don't see enough moisture coming up over the next couple of weeks to really change that perspective at all. Maybe a few showers that might moisten up the topsoil and settle the dust a little bit. But it's pretty late in the year, so it's not like we're going to really make a big difference. But some of these crops are pretty stressed right now, and I think that that's going to continue. In the meantime, it's still pretty moist in the northwestern half of the Corn Belt, and we have a lot of green crops still up that way, which raises an interesting question in my mind. You know, we're looking at a succession of three cold air masses coming out of the Arctic into Canada. And this is building a very large pool of colder than normal air. And of course, everybody's aware that the temperatures are going to be below normal for the next 5 to 7 days. But I think that there's a tendency here for folks to underestimate the intensity of this cold. Some of the computer forecast models have kind of just suggested, oh yeah, middle and upper 30s is as cold as it's going to get. Well, I don't buy into that. I think it's going to end up being colder, and I do think we're going to see some freezes across North Dakota, portions of Minnesota, Wisconsin, and upper Michigan, and we may see frost all the way down into parts of northern Iowa, possibly, and this all is going to occur from Friday into Sunday, maybe some frost still lingering on Monday, and I just find it interesting that the majority of the forecasters out there are not really making much out of this. And it just seems like every day we come in and there's just a little bit higher volume of cold being advertised. And there has been a trend in the model data to suggest that the temperatures are going to be lower than they were, you know, a day or two earlier. So there's a trend here that we need to pay attention to. I am concerned about immature crops in those states that I mentioned. It may not be that big a deal because we do have such a large crop, but if you're a producer in one of those areas and you're going to see some freezing temperatures, you're not going to be very happy with the outcome.
So when you talk about the pool of cold air, it gathers there and then eventually it sort of dumps out, and it's going to dump out across the northern plains and into the northwestern Corn Belt at that point. When you're watching this, as this cold air gathers, what is it that tells you that it's gathering and that it's becoming a potential problem? How big does it have to get in order for it to cross such vast areas that have been, I guess they've been cooling down, but they're still fairly warm and not pick up just radiant heat from the earth?
Yeah, and that's the key. That is exactly the key. Earlier this week, and even late last week, the model data was suggesting, oh, there's going to be one, you know, shot of cool air. It'll come and go. It'll be quick, and it's not going to have much of an impact because of what you just said. There's so much heat in the ground that, you know, it won't have an impact. But then earlier this week, I think it was Monday, there was all of a sudden two surges of cold air And also with those two surges of cold, there was also a more significant upper level trough of low pressure evolving over Ontario. And now in today's data and starting last night, there is a third surge of cold. And all three surges will come down. The first one will obviously moderate greatly because of the radiant heat, as you mentioned. The second one is the more intense and more deep cold. And so it'll really drop the temperatures quite a bit. And again, the air mass will moderate a little bit, but not as much as the first surge of cold. And then we get the third surge to come in and reinforce that second. And so you've got this broad area of cold air that is in Saskatchewan and Manitoba, centered on the back side of this deep trough of low pressure that'll be over Ontario. And because the trough doesn't move much through the weekend, the cold will just kind of pool up in those areas, and eventually a surface high pressure system that will be fairly strong in size will develop on the backside of that trough and will start pushing the cold into the U.S. So that's what I'm seeing here. And the trend has to reverse if we're going to back out of this without having a little bit more significant frost and freezes in these states that I've mentioned. So at the moment, we're only getting colder and not warmer. And I think we're running out of time. It's already Wednesday. We've had our first frost and some freezes in Saskatchewan this morning, and temperatures were about a degree colder than expected this morning. Now, you may think a degree doesn't matter, but when you're talking about frost versus freezes, it does become a significant feature. And since the next surge of cold will be more intense, then I'm a little concerned that the temperatures will already be colder biased on Saturday and Sunday when the coldest air finally pools into the region.
Well, next week, when we talk on Wednesday, you'll be both the hero for predicting it and the villain if it comes true. And if it doesn't happen, we just won't talk about it at all. How about that?
Well, that sounds like a good plan to me. Maybe you don't even bother to call me.
That's right. And then one last item. Very quickly, South America, Mato Grosso has started to move today. And depending on where you are in Brazil, I should say, and Mato Grosso, I think, on the 15th. What do you see for the beginning of their season?
Yeah, we're going to start off with a little bit of a drier tendency. There'll be a little nervousness, especially since some of the computer forecast models out there are suggesting a La Nina or a La Nina-like environment may evolve. But one of the words of caution I want to leave you with it is that in order to have those really poor early season rain events taking place in late September and October, because of a La Nina, you really need the La Nina event to be already developed when you go into August and early September. And we don't have that today. And so really looking at the South America rainfall pattern over the past few weeks, and including the big rain that just occurred in Argentina this past weekend, tells me that the atmosphere is still operating in a normal fashion and that there is no bias at the moment with a La Nina. So I think we're going to get to late September and we'll start off a little bit dry, but I think that we'll start seeing the pop-up showers and thunderstorms occurring as they would normally. But I do think that as we get into the latter half of October and early November, there may be less than normal rain in places like eastern Argentina, Uruguay, Rio Grande do Sul, and parts of Paraguay. But I think the showers that occur in Mato Grosso and Goiás will probably occur relatively normally, with maybe just a little less than usual amounts of rain.
Hey, thank you much. We'll talk with you next Wednesday.
All right. Have a good week.
You too. Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Joined us on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media. I'm Todd Gleason.